Hello, everyone. Welcome back to our AOC PMR podcast. My name is Shahana Momin, and I'm a fourth-year medical student and current co-chair for the AOC PMR Public Relations Student Council Committee. I will be the host for the podcast today, and with me today I have Dr. Nikola Dragojevic, the current program director for the University of Texas at Houston's PMNR residency program. Welcome to our podcast, Dr. Dragojevic. It's my pleasure to host you. Thank you so much for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I am awesome. Thanks so much for being here. Before we go forward with some questions, I just want to give a quick introduction to our audience about your background. Is that okay?
That's fine.
Awesome. So Dr. Nikola Dragojevic, DO, is an assistant professor and residency program director in the Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at McGovern Medical School in Houston, Texas. He board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation and brain injury medicine. He completed osteopathic medical school at New York College of Osteopathic Medicine in 2012. He completed residency training in physical medicine and rehabilitation at McGovern Medical School in 2016, where he was chief resident, then stayed for fellowship training in brain injury medicine. Upon graduation, he was invited to join the faculty at McGovern and has since worked in the brain injury and stroke programs and neuromuscular rehabilitation programs at Tier Memorial Hermann. Dr. Dragojevic loves to share his passion for patient care with residents and fellows and was promoted to residency program director in 2020. In his spare time, he enjoys automotive journalism and spending time with his growing family. Thank you again for being here with us today. We're going to go ahead and get started. In this podcast, I'm going to try to explore your journey into the field of PMNR, as well as talk to you a little bit about your current insights as program director for the UT Houston PMNR program. And just kind of pick your brain and see, you know, what advice you have for students. So let's go ahead and get started. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm looking forward
to
this.
All right, let's roll. Okay, first question. I'll give you a softball. How did you first discover the field of PMNR when you were a medical student? Could you describe your journey into the specialty?
Sure. I was literally introduced to physiatry within a few days of medical school. So, like within the first few days of OMM lab, at that time, Dr. Wolfgang Giliar was working in the osteopathic medicine department at NICOM. And, you know, with the start of OMM lab, you need volunteers to learn how to do things and learn how to look and palpate and diagnose and assess and treat. And I remember I was willing to go up there. And of course, he was rattling off all of the things wrong with my posture. And then he said, "I bet it hurts you right here." And he literally touched the single spot on the inside of my shoulder blades and like crippled me to the ground. And I couldn't believe how he did that. And I met him afterwards and I was like, "How did you know that? Like, how did you learn how to do that?" And he just opened up to me about physiatry and OMM and the intersection of OMM principles into medicine. And that kind of got me started and piqued my curiosity. I joined the PMNR interest group at NICOM, which was really big. I think over 20 people from my class went into PMNR, which is huge. I don't know if that's ever been done before. So class of 2012,
woohoo!
You're where it's at. But that, you know, just got me exposed to more and more of the faculty in the, you know, New York City and Long Island area. So just meeting with them, talking with them, rotating through some of the residency programs when I was a third year and a fourth year, just totally cemented my interest in physiatry. I knew it, I loved it, and I couldn't get enough of it.
So you had like a snap moment where he just touched you and it was, you were like, this is a spot, and you were like just amazed at the anatomy. I'm always that's so crazy.
Intersection of, you know, anatomy, neurology, OMM, and how that affects function and your day-to-day experience as a person just, you know, totally surprised me and caught me off guard. And it was, you know, it was literally an aha moment. You know, this is why I went to medical school. This is the skills that I want to learn to be able to make people's lives better.
Yeah. You had your like Eureka PMNR moment. I love that.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Okay, so PMNR is a very diverse field, so many subspecialties and possibilities. And as we mentioned in your biography, you did a fellowship in TBI for traumatic brain injury. So what made you specifically want to pursue this subspecialty?
One, because it's totally fun. Monica Verduzco Gutierrez calls it the dark side of PMNR, halfway joking. And it's not the dark side, it's the best side. But I just love it for the patient population. I love it for the pathology. There's such a broad spectrum of how brain injuries or strokes can affect people from a functional standpoint and how physiatry can help. We build really long relationships with patients and their families, which I really cherish. And I think that it's always a new challenge every day. You know, you could have someone with a left MCA territory ischemic stroke and they don't look the same. And you can have new challenges in, you know, two patients with the same diagnoses, and you won't necessarily treat them the same way. And that challenge, building that art and building that clinical acumen, has been so much fun for me over the years that it was a really easy choice for a specialty.
When did you know?
I think by the time I was a PGY3, I knew that I wanted to do brain injury fellowship. So I've always been drawn to neurologic rehabilitation. So that's what was kind of there from the beginning. But you know, as a PGY2, I got a lot of exposure to spinal cord and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then I started getting exposure to pediatric rehab and I was like, oh, this is really cool. And what I kept always, you know, finding myself drawn back to was like the brain injury and stroke patients. And I was like, okay, I know that this is what I want to chase.
That's a good point for students that are pursuing PM&R, because as someone who's just doing it away right now, it's like, what do I keep coming back to? What is that like patient population that I keep kind of wanting to draw back to? So that's awesome. That I think TBI is really fascinating too. I haven't seen quite enough of it yet to decide, but it's very cool to see the patients progress.
In due time, you'll get that exposure.
Yeah.
And I think the thing about PM&R is that, you know, you will, you know, in your physiatry training, you will inevitably get a lot of experience working with brain injury and stroke and spinal cord injury patients. And so you don't necessarily have to do a fellowship to work with those patient populations, right? You just have to, you know, seek out those experiences and learn those clinical skills and build your practice over time. I really wanted to do a fellowship because I wanted that extra time in my education. I wanted that extra year sort of devoted to my interests and pursuits. But I could have gone straight into practice and been working with a very similar patient population like I am now. So you don't have to have a fellowship to work in those patient populations. I think, you know, like you mentioned, physiatry is going the way of internal medicine with like subspecialties upon subspecialties upon subspecialties. But PM&R is sufficiently broad that you don't have to do that if you want to work with certain patient populations. And if you change your mind a couple of years down the line and you want to work with a different group of patients at some other place, you have the flexibility to do that with your physiatry training. And that, you know, that ability is, I think, makes us kind of different than a lot of other medical specialties.
Yeah. I might be biased and I'm sure you are too, but I think it's the best field out there. So
if I could do it all over again, I would choose the exact same path.
There you go. That's what I want to hear. So that's awesome. So you're program director now. Could you give us a quick rundown of your program curriculum and unique aspects of UT Houston's PM&R residency program?
Sure. So we're a categorical program based in the Texas Medical Center. It's the largest medical complex in the world. We have really robust neurologic rehabilitation exposure through TEER, which is a dual TBI and SCI model system. So we literally get patients from all over the world for their rehabilitation in all phases of their injury, from acute to subacute to chronic. So those exposures are really strong. But I think we also have really broad interventional pain and musculoskeletal medicine exposure as well. And I think that we have a really great group of faculty that is really focused on teaching, and we have a one-to-one faculty to resident ratio. So you get a lot of face time with your attendings. You're not competing for procedures or training opportunities with other residents or students. We love that UT family, that ability to, you know, not just help you grow professionally, but, you know, mentor you throughout your years and, you know, stay close in years after.
Yeah, I think when I had asked you previously about, you know, what's the one word that you would describe the UT Houston program, you had said close-knit. So
yeah,
it does sound like a really good family down there.
We try really hard. I think that it was the things that stood out to me when I was a resident and a fellow, and one of the reasons why I chose to stay as a faculty member. And I think one of the things that I really want to try to build and as a program director now is to continue that and make it grow in different ways.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hopefully I get a chance to kind of experience the program myself a little bit later, but that's awesome. And I hope that everyone kind of understands what a special program it is. And the medical center is huge. As a Houston native myself, it's a big perk. And like you said, the food is good in Houston. I think we've mentioned that previously.
Yeah, the food in Houston is really good. I think it's one of the best culinary scenes in the United States, but maybe I'm a little biased. But yes, it's really easy to get lost in Texas Medical Center. It happens to everybody all the time. And we won't let you graduate from our program if you don't admit to getting lost in the medical center at least once. So it has to happen.
It's a rite of passage. Got it.
Exactly.
Awesome. So, I mean, you've been there for a long time. How has it changed since you did residency there?
It's changed in a lot of ways. I think first and foremost, when I was there, it was an advanced program. Now it is a categorical program. So you are in the Texas Medical Center from the beginning. And we have spent a lot of time and energy shaping the intern year so that it is, you know, very productive in terms of what you need as a future physiatry resident. Yes, you're going to have wards months. Yes, you're going to have an ICU month, but those are necessary experiences to build your clinical acumen. So that way, when you're taking care of sick rehabilitation patients, you know what you're doing. But we offer a lot of other things in that internship year, like, you know, rheumatology and neurology and ambulatory clinics and internal medicine subspecialties. And those are the types of things that help round out your training and make it a lot easier for you to talk and work with these consultants in the future. There's definitely been a big expansion of the musculoskeletal and pain training in our program since I was a resident. When I was a resident, we definitely had to hunt those spinal procedures. Now it's like all over the place. It's not a problem. So it's been good for our patients because, you know, there's a whole gamut of additional things that we can do for, you know, pain and spine conditions that our program didn't previously offer. But then it's great for our residents too, because they're in their hands on doing the assessments, doing the procedures with the faculty members. And like I said, they're not competing with other people for the procedures. So you get a lot of that from the beginning of your third year and into your fourth year. And it really helps you hone in on those procedural skills a lot.
Yeah. And being at TIER, you guys get such a like large volume of patients as well. So, and being number what, three rehab in the
number two, according to the US News and World Report.
Okay. That's a big deal.
We think it's a big deal.
No, it is a big deal. Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, the US News and World Report is interesting. I think it's good in a way because it, you know, they've recently transitioned to some quality metrics affecting, you know, how they rank facilities. And so, you know, TIER jumped from number three to number two this past year. And I think that was a big validation for us. Like, hey, we're doing something right. We're trying really hard to give patients the best rehabilitation care, get them home, improve their outcomes. And that's not an easy thing to do when you're dealing with sick rehabilitation patients like a lot of large freestanding inpatient rehab hospitals are doing. It's very challenging. There's a lot of steps. And so, you know, TIER winning that award, I think, was a nice validation of everyone's efforts from not just faculty and the residents, but the nurses and the therapists and all the staff who, you know, come in every day with a smile and help patients get better.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think it shows that it's kind of shining through to me even that you are number two. I'm so sorry that I misspoke about that.
You're making number one and number three and number four and number five, you know, all the way down to like number 25 and number 30. Those are all great places, you know, to train and do your residency. So while the US News and World Report accolades are great, they're not everything, right? And yeah. There's lots of great places for your residency training that don't necessarily have that. And that doesn't mean that they're bad places to train. So
very true. Very true. Well, thanks for talking to us a little bit about the program and how it's changed since you've been there. We've kind of talked a little bit about this, but, and I think I might know the answer, but what would you say is the best part of the program?
For me, it's the UT family. You know, as a resident, as a fellow, I had a lot of the faculty members really, you know, invested in my success from the beginning. Personal phone calls, attending, saying, you know, you can call me Gerard, you can call me Monica. It didn't have to be Dr. So-and-so. And excuse me, that meant a lot to me when I was a resident. Our department tries really hard to cultivate that close knit and those personal ties, because physiatry is a small field. We're going to see each other at conferences. We're going to see each other doing stuff like this. And I think if we can have, you know, close friendships and not just professional relationships, that's all the better.
I think that's really true. It sounds like you've had some lifelong mentors yourself. So I think, and I'm experiencing that right now too. So I think it's a very special kind of field, and the program itself. I think a lot of programs are very much like that, but it's really good to hear that UT Houston's is also just like a tiny little family.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like to think that a lot of physiatry programs, because I think that physiatry draws those types of people. You know, people who are personally invested in the people who are around them, not just the patients that they're taking care of, but, you know, other professionals that they work alongside, and, you know, faculty to the residents, residents to the medical students, right? That's a a kind of ethos that trickles down in a good way. And I think a lot of physiatry programs offer that. We're not unique in offering that. Do I think we do a good job of it? I do. But I think there's a lot of other physiatry training programs that do it really well too. And so, as hard as it can be in the virtual environment, those are things that, you know, you as an applicant got to try to seek out and figure out, like, hey, what's the vibe like at this place? And how are the faculty mentoring the residents? Are the residents mentoring one another? And, you know, all of those things that you think will help you be successful, you got to try to figure out if those programs have it or not.
Yeah, got to see if it's like a culture fit and if it's the kind of family that you want to, you know, kind of join. So
yeah. Because there's so much focus on the, I feel like if I can go back, if you permit me to go back in time when I was an applicant, there's so much focus that at least I had on, oh, I gotta say this, I want to show off this part of myself, or I want to demonstrate this part of myself. And you can get really caught up in that cycle and lose sense of who you are as a person. Right? And what's important to you. And it's so much better to just be authentic and be true to yourself and know, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm after. Let me see if this program has it. And if it doesn't, that's okay. That just means it's not a good fit for you. So keep looking, you know, because what works for you doesn't work for somebody else. And you're going to spend 3-4 years at a place, maybe even longer. You got to make sure that it's a right fit for you. And you know, geographic is only one part of that puzzle.
Yeah, I think the best advice that I've gotten so far is just be yourself on interviews and don't forget what you hold that's important to you. Just a lot of people are, you know, there's even been classmates of mine that are like, oh, we don't know if we should tell programs that we have kids or that we're married because we're concerned how that's going to be perceived. I'm like, that's such a big part of who you are in your life. And if they can't accept that, then is that somewhere that you think you would be a good fit or that you'd be happy? So I think that especially with the virtual, you know, madness right now with the virtual interviewing and all the COVID chaos of applications, I think med students are kind of forgetting that quickly because it's just such a stressful time. So it's a good reminder to everyone listening that just be yourself. It'll be okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'll end up where you're meant to end up.
Everyone has a bright light. You just got to let it shine.
There you go. Didn't think I was going to be inspired today, but here we are. So are there any specific new initiatives that you've implemented in the program since you've been program director that you're looking to, you know, things that you're looking to change?
Yeah, our program just graduated its first limb loss rehabilitation fellow, Dr. Vanodia. And Dr. Vanodia spent a lot of time with our residents, kind of teaching prosthetics and orthotics, surgical complications, and, you know, physiatric management of limb loss. And our residents loved working with the fellow and Dr. Melton. And this kind of got us thinking, oh, we should make like a dedicated P&O rotation. So we made a dedicated P&O rotation, which is a lot of fun, based at Tier and then at a main Memorial Hermann, which is our level one trauma center. So our seniors are going through that this year. So it's a lot of fun. We reached out to some of the other residency programs at UT Health, and they were happy to have our residents. So we were able to give people elective time through other residency programs. So I thought that was kind of neat. So one of our seniors is doing hyperbarics and wound care. Another one is doing musculoskeletal radiology for a month. So that kind of expands, you know, our rotations a little bit, especially for our seniors who are looking to develop some more clinical skills before they graduate. And then I think we're trying to build up the perks of our program too, right? You know, we started getting our senior residents to the Kessler PM&R board review course. We're building out a mock oral boards curriculum, society memberships with like AAPM&R and AAP, you know, book stipends and access to the AAPM&R Q bank and things that, you know, as a PGY2 don't necessarily have a big impact, but as you, you know, are a PGY3 or a PGY4 and you're preparing for your boards, it becomes much more meaningful. So, you know, shoring up finances to be able to do stuff like that, I think is one of the things that I'm really happy that our department has been able to do. If I could like look into the future and think about what I would really want to do, man, I would really want a pain program in our department. A pain fellowship. We have pain faculty, but I would love a pain fellowship.
That's a big one. Every
it's a big ask, and it can't be done in a year. But you know, if I can put my forward thinking glasses on, that's what I would love to do.
Gonna get on the pain train.
Yep.
I love it. Okay. I can see it happening. I can see it happening under your leadership.
I appreciate your optimism.
You did say everyone has a bright light, so gotta stay positive. Yes. I love it. Okay. So that was a really positive topic. Now something a little bit more on the darker side, but in your experience, you know, COVID-19 has affected the world around us, just how we live our daily lives. How do you think it has affected the world of PM&R?
I think that it has put, I think it's put rehabilitation and function, you know, more front and center. And it's put disposition planning more front and center in the medical world than it ever has before. And that's our opportunity as physiatrists to step in and intervene, right? Not just enabling people to get access to rehabilitation services, but starting to identify what are the sequela of COVID-19 and coming up with ways to treat that. And, you know, how will physiatry manage the long-term sequela in ways that other specialties will not necessarily do or think of to approach in the same way we do as physiatrists? I think that's a big calling to us to, you know, step up and offer resources that people weren't necessarily expecting. So hopefully that helps, you know, build physiatry and move it forward and help it have a more prominent place in medical centers where it may not have had previously.
I've been seeing a lot of just patients even with long COVID that are coming in for rehab needs, that are coming in for spasticity management, for migraines, for other like long-term effects. So I think, yeah, like our field is very unique in kind of dealing with those things because we don't know the long-term effects of what's happening. And I think that people are finally maybe starting to understand a little bit more about what rehab is and how important it is. So I think it's a really kind of like a turning point, it seems like, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I hope so. I think, you know, because we were talking earlier about how broad physiatry is, right? It makes it easy for us to have something to offer patients who are, you know, battling all of the sequela of a COVID-19 related illness. And I think if, you know, we as physiatrists can take something bad and turn it into something good in that way, then, you know, we've responded to that call.
Well said. I think that's really true. I'm trying to take maybe something that was tragic or very, you know, dark spot in someone's life and trying to get them back to, you know, maybe where they were at before, at least a little bit better. So moving on to kind of talking about medical students right now, we spoke a little bit earlier about this, but, you know, one of the issues that fourth year medical students specifically are facing right now is just getting experiences in PM&R and getting experiences with different programs around the country, especially with, you know, the current AAMC guidelines. How would you approach that problem if you were currently a fourth year medical student yourself?
Man, I feel for you all. It's a huge problem, and there's not a lot that you as medical students can do about it. You know, a lot of people who apply to physiatry had the opportunity to do two or three aways. That's not possible now. And there's still so many medical schools that don't have a PM&R department where, you know, someone can rotate through. So, you know, if I was a fourth year applying now, I would say, if you have an opportunity to do an elective at a residency training program, do it. But if you don't have that opportunity, it doesn't mean that you're not a good applicant or that you won't get taken seriously. You know, us program directors, we talk with one another about these issues. And I think everybody acknowledges that, you know, the last, you know, year or two has been exceedingly difficult for fourth year medical students to feel out programs, you know, link up with residents, either current or past, and kind of learn about the programs, what they're really like. When you can't see a place in person, it makes it very hard to visualize yourself there. When you can't travel to a city, is that place going to be a good place for me or my family or my significant other, you know, for the next 3 or 4 years? There's just so many variables that you literally cannot address. So I think you have to do what you can from the virtual standpoint to try to come up with that information. So that's where, you know, PM&R scholars, Inside the Match, podcasts like this one from AOC PM&R, Twitter of all things has become a huge resource for applicants to find out information about programs and reach out to real residents and fellows and alumni to, you know, build those relationships and find that information in a way that you couldn't necessarily before. I do think, you know, AAPM&R, AAP, AOC PM&R have lots of resources for medical students. So those are good places to start. And each of those organizations has like a resident section. And, you know, last I checked, all of those residents are, you know, working in those capacities because they want to share their passion. They want to share their enthusiasm, right? And, you know, talking with them and hearing what their experiences were like and things that they saw may help give you some context about what the application and interview trail is like. I think if you can find a physiatry mentor to write you a letter of recommendation, that's great. You know, it used to be, you know, almost like sacrosanct that you had to have a PM&R letter of rec. And I think that there's a lot of program directors out there who understand that not all applicants from PM&R will be able to get that, for all the reasons that we just discussed. So I would say don't let that deter you from applying. Just use other opportunities to find out more information about the field and build relationships with others in the field. So that way you have relevant experiences and knowledge that, you know, you can talk about during the interviews.
Awesome. So kind of doing your own research and trying to connect with people and learn more in any way that you can about a program.
Yeah.
Get involved. Awesome. Okay. What do you think are important, kind of just along that same vein, what do you think some important questions are for applicants to be asking during interview season?
How's the cafeteria? Is the resident room well stocked? I'm just kidding. Those may be very important questions to somebody. So
you're a big foodie. That is what I have learned.
I don't turn down a meal. That is true. I would ask things like, tell me about your relationship, you know, asking the residents, tell me about your relationships with the faculty. What are teaching rounds like? What are teaching experiences like? Have you ever had to, you know, call faculty for help, and how did that go? Asking the residents what the strengths and the weaknesses are of the program, asking the residents about the quality of life of the city that they're living in, asking about how programs dealt with, you know, family or personal situations that required people to take time away, and how were they supported, and how did that go? Where have alumni gone, and what are they doing, and does that match up with the type of stuff that I want to do in the future? Those are the big things I can think of.
Okay. When you're saying, you talked a little bit about the strengths and weaknesses. So just some real talk here. If you just ask anyone that you interview with kind of about, you know, what's the weakest thing that you think your program, you know, what do you think your program is weak on? Do you think that's too aggressive, or do you think that's something that, okay. That's something
I don't think it's too aggressive. Yeah. Okay. I think that every residency program is trying to put its best face forward, just like every applicant is trying to put its best face forward. Right. But that also includes being true to yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I love our program, but we don't have a sports medicine fellowship. We don't have a whole umbrella of sports medicine faculty in our department. That's an opportunity for growth in our department compared to other departments, right? So I'm not going to go and sell sports medicine in our program because it's not the strongest part of our program, right? But I think programs ought to be honest, just like you as an applicant ought to be honest with, you know, who you are and where you're going. The program should do the same.
It's like virtual speed dating with an
kind honor. Of. Yeah. Yeah. Virtual speed dating with an honor code. But like the relationship is potentially longer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. You can't get out of it if you, you know, accept that. If you swipe right, you have to commit. It's going to be 3 or 4 years.
Right. Because, you know, when the match happens, like you're committed to that place. And if you want to leave, it can be very difficult to find training elsewhere.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah. So stakes are just a little bit higher.
Yeah. Oh, just a tiny bit. Just a little bit. What are some common mistakes that you think applicants make that put them at risk of not matching?
In my mind, it all goes back to authenticity, you know, being true to who you are. When people are filling out ERAS and they're putting in all of their experiences in there, not everybody has access, you know, to early physiatry exposure, right? We get that. But we can tell when you're overselling an experience that wasn't that meaningful to you. So I would say, don't try to oversell something that, you know, is not as strong or as meaningful in your life as it really was. You know, it's everyone wants to put their best face forward. And so everyone wants to put like every single award they've ever gotten or every single experience they've ever had. But when you're going through 500 applicants, that can be like mind numbing, right? So I would say that one of the best things that you could do as an applicant is not invest your time in a multitude of things to try to make you look like a better applicant. Invest your time in the things that you really care about, the things that you are really passionate about, so that you can be a driver of change, so that you can have some sense of accomplishment in the people that you worked with or the community that you're a part of, because that is what's going to come out when you start talking about it in your interviews. And that is what people are looking for in residency programs, right? It's about commitment and knowing who you are and building relationships with people. That's physiatry, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you get all of these like volunteer experiences right at the very end, that doesn't necessarily make you a better applicant, right? than someone who stuck to something for a couple years and, you know, they like fill up the screen with their enthusiasm about it. It comes off very differently and people can tell.
Yeah. I've heard, yeah, like you need to know your resume and you need to be able to speak about it and speak about it passionately. Make sure you can talk about it like you actually enjoyed it and that you truly do. So,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, I think that, you know, everyone's stressed during this application cycle. Everyone was stressed last year. The virtual interviews were so tough and programs hated it. Applicants hated it, but we got through it somehow, right? And hopefully this year goes a little bit better. So, you know, just having, you know, knowing yourself and, you know, giving yourself a pass if, you know, you didn't say something that came out like exactly how you wanted or whatnot. Like you'll have another opportunity to showcase who you are with somebody else during that day. So you can't, don't get too caught up on how one interview goes because you probably have another two or three more coming.
Yeah, you have to not fixate on the mistakes. Just move on.
Exactly.
It's a good mentality. Good reminder. I'm getting some good reminders, Dr. Dragojevich, right now.
We're trying.
Season is coming up, so
yeah, we're trying to make this relevant to all of the you know the applicants. You know, how do we impart meaningful change through a podcast? Me and Shahan are trying to do it right now.
We're trying to change PM&R right here, right now. So we're nearing the end of our podcast. You've been super resourceful. You've been super insightful. I think our listeners have learned a lot from you today. I really appreciate you taking the time out to just chat with me today on this podcast episode and giving little nuggets of wisdom. Where can our listeners connect with you to learn more about you and just, you know, stay connected, communicate, ask questions, reach out?
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy this part of being a program director and a physiatrist. So I'm very happy to answer people's questions. So probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is through Twitter or so my Twitter handle is at Dr. Nico Drago, D-O. And or you can find us at UTHPMR. And that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. If you've got some burning question about our residency program or something that didn't come through in your research about us. But I'm very happy to, you know, help applicants in any way that I can. You know, with like questions or something like that, just feel free to find me there. That's probably the easiest place.
And I can confirm, listeners, that Dr. Dragojevich does respond to his DMs on Twitter because he was very responsive on there when we were trying to schedule this thing. So he's great about his med Twitter use.
I appreciate that. I feel like, you know, if you send a DM and no one replies, like that there's like a little part of you that like kind of dies inside.
It hurts, right? A little bit. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Come on, man. I slid into your DMs for like, you know, advice as a student. It's like not even, it's good intention. So I appreciate that you responded. I think
I'm happy to help.
Yeah.
I personally have had, you know, I've reconnected with some people over Twitter, you know, this past year and they've helped me out already, you know, since then. And so, you know, everyone has, you know, something that they could get help with from a peer. And, you know, well, we got to help one another, especially during times like these.
Yeah, just got to pay it forward. Any last minute advice or things that we did not touch upon that you want to chat about?
For the fourth years who are applying, be yourself. If you're true to who you are, all the good stuff will come out and the match will take care of itself.
All right, that was Guru Dragojevich for you. Dropping some knowledge. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Dragojevich, for all of this, for talking to me. I have really enjoyed myself this evening. I was not expecting to laugh this much, and I think and learn this much and be inspired. Thanks for talking to me about your journey, your insights as a PD. I think I learned a lot today. I'm speechless essentially right now. I think that listeners will really enjoy listening to us chat, and I think they'll learn a lot.
Thanks. It's been a lot of fun. I hope people find it helpful.
I think they will. And I just want you to have a great rest of your day. So thank you. Thanks for joining us today. All right.
See you later.
See ya.